Welcome to your deep dive. So, in the stack of research you sent over for us to analyze this week, there's this really fascinating study from the journal Where. It was published back in 2019 by researchers at Cambridge, Tata Steel, and Tampere University.
Yeah, it's a fantastic paper.
It really is. And looking through your notes on this, I mean, it is super easy to see why this paper caught your attention. It basically takes everything we assume about industrial durability and just completely flips it on its head.
It really does. It challenges some very fundamental assumptions.
Right. So to set the scene for you, picture a massive, heavy-duty excavator operating down in a mining pit. Think about the giant steel bucket on that machine just violently smashing into a wall of solid granite.
Just massive amounts of kinetic energy.
Exactly. When you visualize that impact, you know, metal teeth grinding against unyielding rock, the intuitive assumption is that the metal needs to be as hard as humanly possible to survive it.
Right.
We generally equate hardness with invincibility. Like, if you are going into a battle against stone, the logical move is to build the hardest armor you can engineer.
Well, it is a completely logical assumption. And I mean, it's the guiding principle that drove metallurgy for decades.
But that's where the paper steps in, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because in the chaotic, violent world of moving earth and crushing ore, designing a metal to simply be, harder can actually make it fundamentally weaker.
Which sounds completely counterintuitive.
It does. But the researchers in this paper are looking at a highly destructive phenomenon called impact abrasion. And their findings prove why toughness, which is a very different mechanical property than pure hardness, why toughness is the true benchmark for survival in these environments.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because
Okay.
the paper draws a hard line between regular scratching and the realities of an actual mining operation.
Yeah, the distinction is crucial here.
Right, because if we are just talking about pure abrasion, you know, classical physics rules apply. Hardness correlates beautifully with pure abrasion resistance. If you have a harder material, it resists being scratched by a softer material.
Exactly, like
Yep.
a diamond scratching glass.
Right. But an excavator bucket or a heavy ore crusher, they don't experience pure abrasion. They face impact abrasion. The machinery is colliding with the rocks with immense blunt force while simultaneously sliding against them under heavy loads.
And that combination, the blunt force and the sliding friction, it changes the physics of the wear entirely. In extreme conditions, materials engineered purely for maximum hardness begin to fail catastrophically.
Because hardness comes at a cost, right?
Exactly. Extreme hardness almost always comes at the cost of increased brittleness. When an impact hits a highly rigid, ultra-hard metal, the energy of that shockwave basically has nowhere to go.
The metal can't absorb it.
Right. The atomic lattice cannot flex to accommodate the stress. Instead, it suffers from microscopic cracking. The structural integrity fails at the granular level, and the metal simply chips away.
It's like dropping a glass plate versus a plastic Tupperware container.
Oh, that's a perfect analogy. Yeah.
Right, because the glass is way harder than the plastic, but if you drop it on the floor, it shatters. The plastic Tupperware is softer, but it bounces. It survives.
Exactly. And that introduces the concept of toughness. In material science, toughness is a material's ability to absorb energy and physically deform without actually fracturing.
It's the capacity to take a hit, stretch a little bit, and stay intact.
Yeah.
But if engineers already know this basic concept, why was it so hard to prove in steel manufacturing before this paper came out?
What's fascinating here is the metallurgical catch-22. Engineers have always known toughness is valuable. But in steel manufacturing, strengthening mechanisms sit on a seesaw.
Okay, a seesaw.
Yeah, like if you tweak the chemical recipe or the heat treatment to increase the hardness of a steel, you almost inevitably pay a penalty by reducing its toughness.
Oh, I see. They are inversely related.
Right. And that seesaw effect is exactly why this theory was so incredibly difficult to prove in a definitive laboratory setting. To prove that toughness is more vital than hardness in an impact abrasion environment, you have to eliminate all the other chemical variables.
You need a perfect apples to apples comparison.
Exactly. Historically, if researchers tested a really tough steel against a really hard steel, they were testing two completely different chemical alloys.
And so the critics would just say, well, the tough steel didn't win because it was tough. It won because it had more chromium.
Exactly. They could easily dismiss the results. They'd argue the victory was due to a different carbon ratio
Yeah.
or something else entirely.
So to silence that debate, the researchers behind this 2019 study had to figure out a way to drastically alter the physical toughness of a single piece of metal without changing its chemical composition at all.
Which is a massive engineering challenge.
Right. And looking at the methodology they used, the solution is just a masterclass in materials engineering. They designed a brand new, highly specific, low-alloyed steel. The elemental recipe they put together is incredibly deliberate.
Yeah, looking at how each element functions explains a lot about the final result.
So they started with carbon, which dictates the baseline strength of the steel matrix, but then they added silicon specifically to manipulate the carbon.
And the silicon is crucial here. When steel cools down, the carbon naturally wants to clump together and form carbides.
Which are bad for toughness, right?
Right. They're extremely hard but highly brittle ceramic-like particles within the metal. Silicon alters the diffusion rate of the carbon. It basically acts as a barrier, preventing those brittle carbides from forming.
Oh, wow. So it traps the carbon.
Exactly. It forces the carbon to stay dissolved within the metal matrix where it can provide strength without creating localized points of brittleness.
That is incredibly clever. They also added chromium and molybdenum, which the paper notes are there to increase hardenability. And just to clarify that term for our deep dive, hardenability isn't just how hard the surface gets, but rather how deeply and consistently the metal can achieve its phase transformation throughout its entire thickness during cooling.
Yeah, it's about uniformity.
Right. Then they incorporated nickel. And nickel is the big one here, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Nickel is the primary driver for toughness in this alloy. At the atomic level, nickel atoms within the iron lattice allow for slight amounts of slip when the metal is placed under sudden stress. Yeah, it gives the atomic structure the microscopic flexibility to shift around without completely snapping the metallic bonds.
And finally, they added vanadium, which the researchers used to refine the grain size. This is where the mechanics get really fascinating for me. When steel is heated up, its internal crystalline structure forms into distinct grains, and those grains naturally want to grow and bloat.
Like bubbles expanding.
Exactly. But vanadium forms these tiny, highly stable precipitates that act like microscopic roadblocks along the boundaries of those grains. When the metal gets hot, those vanadium roadblocks physically stop the grains from expanding.
They keep the internal structure incredibly fine and densely packed.
Right. But the chemical recipe just sets the potential of the steel. The thermal and mechanical treatment is what actually unlocks it.
Yeah, this is where they create their primary testing material, which they call the hot rolled steel. They put this alloy through a thermomechanical processing phase, rolling it under immense pressure at specific temperatures.
To create what the paper describes as severely pancaked austenite grains. Which is just a great phrase.
It really paints a picture. And austenite being the high temperature phase of steel where the atoms arrange themselves into a face-centered cubic structure, It allows the metal to be highly formable.
So by rolling it under pressure, they literally flattened that internal crystalline architecture. They pancaked it.
Right. And when that severely pancaked, fine-grained austenite was finally allowed to cool to room temperature, the crystal structure underwent a rapid phase transformation into martensite.
And martensite is the hard stuff.
Exactly. Martensite is formed when the cooling happens so fast that the carbon atoms become trapped inside a stressed, needle-like lattice. This internal strain makes martensite exceptionally hard.
So because of the vanadium roadblocks and the pancaking effect, the resulting martensitic structure in this hot-rolled steel was incredibly fine.
And the numbers on the final product are staggering. This hot-rolled steel achieved a hardness of 561 on the Vickers hardness scale, which is formidable.
But because of that refined, flattened grain structure and all that nickel content, it simultaneously achieved a fracture toughness of 72 megapascals square root meter.
Which is huge.
Right, because fracture toughness is the metric of how much energy is required to make a pre-existing microscopic crack grow larger. So a rating of 72 means it requires immense energy to force a fracture to spread through this material.
So they successfully engineered a steel that possessed extreme rigidity to resist pure scratching, but retain the internal ductility to absorb shock waves without shattering.
It's the perfect material, but to prove it, they needed a control subject. They needed an identical chemical alloy with completely different mechanical properties, And their methodology for creating the control sample is just brilliant.
It really is.
They took a piece of the exact same hot-rolled steel they had just manufactured, so the identical chemical recipe, and they essentially wiped its mechanical memory.
Yeah, they subjected it to a process called rheostenitizing. They heated the steel back up to 900 degrees Celsius and held it there for a full hour.
An hour at 900 degrees.
Yeah, and this intense, prolonged heat completely erased that highly engineered, severely pancaked grain structure. The microscopic grains were allowed to swell up, becoming coarse and chunky.
And after holding it at 900 degrees, they quenched it, cooling it down as rapidly as possible.
Right, which trapped that bloated, coarse grain structure into place. By destroying the refined grains, the fracture toughness of the metal just plummeted.
It lost its internal flexibility.
Exactly. The resulting quenched steel became highly brittle. It would snap rather than yield.
It's basically like baking a cake, right? You're using the exact same batter, but baking one at a slow simmer and blasting the other with a blowtorch to get two completely different textures.
That's exactly what it is.
But wait, the crucial detail you find in the data tables is what happened to its hardness. The hardness actually skyrocketed. The quenched control steel measured 666 on the Vickers scale compared to the hot rolled steel's 561.
Right. It got significantly harder.
Doesn't that mean it still has an unfair advantage in a wear and tear test? I mean, 666 versus 561, that's a big jump.
Well, that's the genius of how they set up the experiment. By putting a harder, brittle version up against a softer, tougher version of the exact same alloy, they isolate the variable of toughness perfectly.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, if the harder, brittle, quenched steel wins the wear and tear test, then the old industry assumption holds true. Pure hardness is the most important factor.
But if the softer, tougher, hot-rolled steel wins, it proves that the ability to absorb impact is the dominant factor in real-world durability. The hardness rules all myth is officially busted.
Exactly.
So with the two mathematically opposed variations of the same steel prepared, the challenge is simulating years of chaotic, violent mining conditions inside a laboratory environment.
Which is not easy to do.
No, not at all. For this, the researchers utilized a specialized piece of equipment at Tampere University in Finland called an impeller tumbler. Going through the diagrams in your sources, this machine is an incredible feat of engineering.
It's designed specifically to replicate the unpredictable violence of impact abrasion. The impeller tumbler does not just drag rocks across metal. It creates a high-energy kinetic environment.
Basically a night-night washing machine full of angry rocks.
Yeah, pretty much. The setup involved taking small, precise rectangular samples of both the hot-rolled and the quenched steels. They measured just 75 by 25 millimeters and about 6 millimeters thick.
And these sample plates are bolted to a central shaft.
Right. And this shaft spins at a blistering 700 revolutions per minute.
Wow.
Spinning a solid steel shaft at 700 RPM generates immense kinetic energy. And that shaft is housed inside a larger exterior drum.
And the drum itself is rotating at 30 RPM, spinning in the same direction as the central shaft.
Exactly. And into this rotating drum, they load 900 grams of Kuru granite.
Kuru granite?
Yeah, it's specifically chosen because it consists of extremely hard, highly abrasive, jagged particles ranging from 10 to 12.5 millimeters in size.
So the metal samples attached to the central shaft are whipping around, continuously colliding with nearly a kilogram of sharp granite chunks. The dual rotation of the shaft and the drum ensures the impacts happen at literally every conceivable angle, right?
Right. The metal suffers glancing zero-degree abrasive slides, as well as catastrophic dead-on 90-degree blunt force impacts.
So the rocks are smashing into the metal from literally every angle. How does the metal even begin to cope with that?
Well, what highlights the sheer violence of this test is a specific operational detail mentioned in the methodology. The Kuwa granite is highly abrasive, but like most silica-based rock, it's also brittle.
Oh, so the rocks break.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Under the constant 700 RPM impacts from the steel, the granite rocks physically shatter and pulverize into fine dust.
So if they just let the machine run, the rocks would turn into sand?
Right. And the test would slowly devolve into a pure sliding friction abrasion test, ruining all the impact data.
So they had to intervene.
Yeah. To maintain the chaotic, high-impact tribological environment, they couldn't just run it continuously. Every 15 minutes, they had to power down the impeller tumbler, open the drum, clean out all the fractured rock dust, and reload it with a fresh 900-gram batch of large, jagged Kuru granite.
Every 15 minutes.
Yeah, and they repeated this exact cycle for four grueling hours to ensure the materials experienced constant, severe impact abrasion.
So what did the wear loss actually look like when they finally turned the machine off?
The results provide the definitive answer to the hardness versus toughness debate. The softer, hot-rolled steel, the one with high toughness, and a lower Vickers hardness of 561 suffered roughly 17% less mass loss than the harder, 666 Vickers quenched steel.
17% less. That is massive.
Oh, absolutely. A 17% reduction in wear loss in an industrial mining context translates to massive operational savings, fewer equipment failures, and significantly extended machinery lifespans.
Because you aren't replacing those giant excavator buckets nearly as often.
Exactly. The data definitively proved that when chaotic blunt force is introduced into an abrasive environment, the softer, tougher steel vastly outperforms the harder, more rigid steel.
But we know the softer steel won. To understand why, the researchers had to zoom in, right? Like, physically move away from the scales and bring the battered metal samples to a scanning electron microscope.
Yeah, you have to look at the actual scars left on the metal.
When they took cross-sectional cuts of the damage and magnified the surface, they identified two distinct mechanisms of destruction.
Right, abrasion-dominated zones and impact-dominated zones.
And the abrasion-dominated zones looked exactly as you would expect, right? Microcutting and plowing.
Yeah, the sharp edges of the granite acted like miniature plows, digging shallow trenches across the surface of the steel.
But the impact-dominated zones revealed blast craters where the granite struck the metal directly. And analyzing the topography of these craters is where the microscopic evidence truly vindicates the toughness theory.
Definitely. In the brittle, quenched steel, the sample that began the test with a much higher hardness, the impact craters left by the granite averaged 15.8 microns in depth.
Okay, 15.8 microns.
But in the softer, tougher, hot-rolled steel, the craters were significantly shallower, averaging only 7.5 microns deep.
Wait, it seems contradictory that the harder steel sustained craters twice as deep.
It does, until the electron microscope reveals the mechanics of a process called microchipping.
Microchipping. Let's dig into that.
So when a sharp edge of Kuru granite violently impacts the metal surface, the sheer kinetic energy displacing the steel forces the material at the point of impact to push outward and upward.
So it forms a raised ridge around the edge of the crater, much like the elevated rim of a volcano.
Exactly. In the brittle, quenched steel, the atomic lattice of that raised lip cannot accommodate any further strain. It basically has zero ductility.
It has a glass jaw.
Yes. So when the next piece of granite comes whipping around at 700 RPM and strikes that rigid lip, the metal cannot bend.
The structural bonds just shear off?
Right. The entire lip snaps away, taking a large chunk of material with it and leaving behind a significantly deeper crater. The metal's rigidity directly caused its own accelerated destruction.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the hot-rolled steel survives because of its internal ductility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because of that severely pancaked nickel-infused structure, when the granite strikes the metal and forces the lip to form, the atomic bonds can actually stretch.
So when the subsequent rocks strike that lip, it does not snap off. It bends, it folds over onto itself, and it remains attached to the surface.
Yeah. And more importantly, this dynamic deformation activates a metallurgical defense mechanism known as work hardening or strain hardening.
Work hardening. This is really the physical core of this entire study. A great way to visualize the mechanics of work hardening is to think about stepping into a field of deep, freshly fallen snow.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. When you take that first step, your boot easily pushes into the snow, creating a deep footprint. But the immense pressure of your weight forcefully compresses the snowflakes directly beneath your boot, entangling the ice crystals and packing them tightly together.
Yeah.
If you step in that exact same footprint again, the snow doesn't give way. It easily supports your weight because the initial impact forced the material to rapidly densify and harden.
That is precisely what is happening at the atomic level in the hot-rolled steel.
Like a boxer building up calluses.
Exactly. When the granite impacts the ductile metal, the force causes the crystalline planes to slip. As they slip, microscopic defects in the atomic lattice, which are called dislocations, they begin to pile up and entangle with one another.
So it creates a sort of traffic jam.
Yeah, a dense traffic jam of entangled dislocations creates a physical barricade that stops further deformation. The steel instantly strain hardens. It dynamically generates a localized armor layer exactly where the force was applied.
Which is incredible. Mm. And the researchers verified this by conducting micro-hardness testing on the bottom of the blast craters after the four-hour impeller tumbler test.
Yeah, and what they found was amazing.
They found that the hot-rolled steel had strain-hardened so intensely during the chaotic beating that its surface was now actually harder than the quenched steel.
It essentially utilized the kinetic energy of the granite to forge a stronger surface in real time while retaining its shock-absorbing internal toughness.
So, what does this all mean for you, the listener? Why should you care about the shape of microscopic craters? Synthesizing all of this data fundamentally changes the paradigm of industrial engineering.
What's fascinating here is how it shifts the entire mindset. For generations, the default approach to mitigating wear in harsh environments has been to design for static rigidity.
Just make it as hard as possible.
Right. But this research proves that in dynamic, high-impact environments, designing for rigid invincibility is a flawed strategy. True durability relies on engineering materials that possess the controlled capacity to yield, deform, and dynamically adapt to the stress they are put under.
It teaches us that rigidity is a vulnerability. It renders the traditional spec sheet metrics totally insufficient. You cannot simply select the alloy with the highest initial Vickers hardness and expect it to survive.
No, you have to engineer the microstructure to manage failure at the atomic level.
Exactly. So we started with the assumption that hard materials are the most durable, stepped into a granite-filled torture chamber, and discovered that microscopic flexibility is the true secret to surviving impact abrasion.
It's a huge breakthrough.
But as we wrap up this deep dive into your sources, there is one final, incredibly provocative detail hidden in the microscopy data that points toward the future of this research.
Oh, the dark contrast regions.
Yes. While analyzing the depths of the impact craters under the electron microscope, the researchers noticed anomalous dark contrast regions. Bits of the Kourou granite were actually getting violently smashed into the steel.
Yeah, when they analyzed the chemical composition of those dark regions at the bottom of the craters, they discovered high concentrations of silica and aluminum oxides.
Which are not elements present in the steel alloy.
No, they are the primary constituents of the Kourou granite.
The extreme kinetic energy of the impeller tumbler was violently smashing the granite into the surface of the tough, hot-rolled steel with such force that microscopic shards of the rock were physically embedding themselves deep into the metallic matrix and remaining permanently locked there.
The steel was yielding enough to capture the rock and then strain hardening around it.
Which raises a wild question for you to mull over. The paper hypothesizes that this embedding process could be creating an entirely new surface dynamic as the machinery operates.
Yeah, the steel is essentially hybridizing with the rock.
It is creating an organic, makeshift metal matrix composite. Is it possible that the machinery we use to destroy rocks is slowly absorbing its enemy?
Building a continuously renewing layer of composite armor out of the very material trying to destroy it.
Exactly. It is a brilliant mechanism of industrial survival to think about. Thank you for sharing these sources and joining us on this exploration of the invisible physics governing our heaviest machinery. The next time you see an excavator tearing through a construction site, you will know exactly what is happening at the atomic level.
It's surviving the chaos, not by remaining perfectly rigid, but by dynamically absorbing the impact.
Rearranging its own structure and utilizing the destructive force to constantly forge a stronger defense. Keep sending us your research, stay curious, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.